Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm your host, Susan McCabe, and you are listening to the voice of Vashon, KVSHLP. Vashon, your island connection, streaming online at voiceofvashon.org. And I can do this thanks to Windermere Vashon Real Estate. Their generosity supports all our community information programming and keeps our emergency alert service running. Today, I am lightening the load on the conversations I have on Real Talk. I mean, we've covered drug addiction and climate action and social justice and the prison system. Today, we're going to talk about gardening and design with my guest, Mary McGinnis. Mary comes to us with 30 years of landscape design, botany. She's a master gardener and now incorporates her credentials in interior design in her business today, which is a design build for interior and exterior projects. Welcome, Mary McGinnis.
Well, hello, Susan McCabe. How are you?
I'm delighted to have you here, and I'm excited. This is, of course, a topic that I'm curious about, and I know our listeners are as well. It is gardening season. We're kind of past the point where we should be planting things, I guess.
Ish.
Yeah. But it's always a good time to think about what's coming up now and oh my God, what have I created?
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes what we create gets away from us a bit. So we'll have a little chat about that. I wanted to take a quick second, though, and marvel at your beautiful studios.
Oh, thank you.
Because this is my first time inside, and it is just a thrill. Susan and I kind of go back a bit, couple of minutes. but the last time I think I sat across the desk from you at Voice of Vashon, we were an internet radio station.
Right.
Broadcast, I think, about as far as the parking lot of the Sunrise Ridge location.
That's right.
So this is very, very exciting. It's been a long journey for everybody who put their love and faith and hope in this place. So it's so exciting to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. And for your information, folks, we are in the Jean Boss Studio, which is on Vashon Highway between the Creamery and the Island Queen. It's kind of a fattening location. But we love this place. And yes, Mary, you are right. Voice of Vashon has been built on love, blood, sweat, and tears, yeah. But mostly love.
Well, a quick little story about you and the anxiety about being on the radio. But when we first started, because it was an internet station,
yes.
I talked myself into being okay because nobody listened.
And
then one day, you got an email from someone in Connecticut, I believe, with a little gardening question. And I remember suddenly being absolutely terrified. So thank you for always being so charming and making this so easy for me. I appreciate it a ton.
Well, because you're here to tell us what you know best, the things that you are most expert at. And so one of the things that intrigued me when we talked about doing this show together was your comment of how we can break our patterns in design, whether it be garden or in our home. How do we break those patterns? Like when I look at my garden, I realize I'm incredibly rigid. Everything is very symmetrical. How do I break out of that?
Wow, that's a really good question. I guess the first part of breaking out of that is the fact that you recognized that something wasn't quite right. You know, a lot of times when you just, something doesn't feel right, there's, and I'm, one of the great things about design, I've said this before the show, is it's an incredible marriage of art and science. And there's that when the aesthetics aren't right, there's a feeling, you just don't feel comfortable there. So that level of awareness is your first step in breaking out of patterns. Always.
It feels like
a 12-step
program.
You got to know you have a problem.
That's right.
You know, and it's interesting. You look at this a couple of different ways. Now, you've got an existing landscape and garden and relationship with the land.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult in that situation to come in and say, let's just change all your patterns. Because those are not only ingrained on the land where your feet have walked, where you've watered, where you haven't, where you've planted things. But it's also kind of in your body. Those patterns are. So sometimes when we are on a site for many years, our physical needs, our physical relationships, our physical understanding and perceptions change. And then those old patterns become evident.
Ah.
So it might not be that you don't have a good pattern or a good design. It may be that you've evolved and you need something more. Maybe that order and organization that you put in place was very important at that point. So a little bit of it is the evolution. The other way to look at those projects is this is a brand new place for you. Spend time seeing how you move. Your patterns, those things are, where do you go when you go outside? What do you do? Who do you do it with? Do you have pets? Do you have children? Do you have time? I mean, these are all the things that when I sit down with you to design a garden or a landscape, and that's my job. It isn't so much to tell you what's right and wrong. I had a friend describe this job once as being a dream wrangler.
Oh, that's great.
You know, it's interesting because both in interior and landscape and exterior design, there is an interview process that lasts, for me, often about 2 hours. And I have a lot of questions. It's taken me a couple years to come up with my little protocol. But what I'm doing is I'm pulling what you need out of you.
Huh.
And then I go back and I try to figure out how to run what you want, what you need, through a filter that is based on money and aesthetics.
And therapy. It's and like therapy. Therapeutic design.
But because that is the thing, too. You know, it's great to want to do a lot of things in your garden. We always say you can have anything you want. It's either time or money.
Mm-hmm. So give us some examples, because I like to do things with mm-hmm. very little money.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have a lot of time. What sort of, for instance, garden designs or garden plants?
Oh, let me give you a couple of, I think I know what you're asking for. So a couple of things that I do when I look at, if I were to come look at your garden, mm-hmm. the first thing I do is I want to see what you see when you come home.
Hmm. Front door?
Front
entryway.
Door, plantings, plants. Because if you come home part of the year and it looks like sticks and chaos, that's how you feel when you come home. Sticks and chaos. Ooh.
So
at an entry, I like to use things that are evergreen, things that look good in the rain, because the color and the power and all those things that you feel when you walk into the nursery and you visually fall in love with things, this is a brief love affair. You know, everybody's gone by about August or September.
I see.
So I want that those patterns and that flow, those things that you were talking about, we move in and out of our environment here in the Northwest. Most of the people I know spend a lot of time outside. But you know what? Most of us really, 42 in rain, pull it in, light the fire, grab a book.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to look at your design as kind of your home, the building of the home. Actually, your whole property is your home. But looking at the building and that we move outwards with the season, and then we contract back in, just like breathing. So as you move out, make sure your entryway looks welcoming. Everything close to the house should look good all year long. I'm a big fan of ferns, for goodness sake. I know they're very
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that, because they're really easy.
They'll grow in the sun and the shade. They look lovely when they're wet. There is that weird 3 weeks when you cut them down to make them look better, that they look like you've got a bunch of porcupines curled up in your garden. But then what I do is, close to the house, as the season progresses and all that color and fabulousness, those are accents. Those are things like jewelry for a really nice black dress, right? Pick the bones, get what you need that is functional all year long. You know, when I think about some of the metaphors of dressing, when I think of design and as, you know, a good solid black dress or a good suit or whatever it is, will take you anywhere. And then the things you add to that are what define how that's used for that particular place, time, right?
So thinking about all the different seasons and wanting things to look good, spring, summer, winter, fall, what are the plants that sustain their good looks throughout the season? And what plants grow well in practically in the dark? Because I've got an entryway that has a very shaded area that is now just dirt.
Does it have, do you get water? Do you
get natural water in there? Yeah.
Lots of really good plants. Epimedium is one of my favorite deep shade plants. It will take dry shade, which is very, very unusual. It's really useful for places that not only don't get a lot of sun, but like under trees. Mm-hmm. A lot of times folks have big cedar trees or big fir trees that don't get a lot of light.
Yeah.
It's not just the light. Those trees take every drop of water because you're growing basically a skyscraper. So something that will function that way. It's lovely. It has a tiny little flower. Anyway, Epimedium.
I have written it down.
Perfect.
Epimedium, folks. Epimedium. Dark places.
So here's a little trade secret, and it's one of the things that makes it tough around here because we run into water issues, right?
Yeah.
In the nursery industry, whether you go to a small grow-out nursery like we have here on the island that does an exceptional job, or whether you buy from a big box store, the growers turn things over retail at the peak of their season, right? So in the spring, everything you see is all the spring flowers, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody buys things. We used to joke, if you're doing an install and I pick out plants and I go to install it in the spring, you better trust me because I look like I'm planting 1 gallon cans of dirt. There's not even leaves on them yet, right? Uh-huh. So what I advise people to do if you're going to update your garden is to take your garden budget and divide it by 4.
Oh, that's a great idea.
So that you can spend, because this happens every time you budget whatever it is. I don't care, $2, $2,000. And then you go in on a good spring Saturday and you load the car and you shoot the whole budget. And then 3 weeks from then, all that stuff is done.
Right.
So I for you to understand that what you see is at its peak. So break it up, buy something, try to do a shopping trip throughout the season.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it does make for a little bit difficult planting. It's hard to plant when when it's so damn hot.
Yeah, so if we're planting now, are we planting for summer or we're planting for fall?
If you go to the market right now, you will find all the plants that, it's kind of crazy. For me, it's not like spring, summer, winter, fall, right? Oh. There's early spring, mid-spring, late spring. Yeah. Early summer, mid-summer, late summer.
Yeah.
And each of those represent kind of a tick on the color wheel for me and also on the seasons. And you'll notice a lot of the plants, I think about this, like why? But the plants that you see in the spring, pinks and blues and yellows.
Yeah.
Right? And then we move into full, much more primary colors for the summer season. And then in the winter season, we go into kind of the oranges and yellows, the rudbeckias and the sunflowers and the echinacea and the coreopsis and the things that are traditionally fall annuals and perennials kind of. So it's really cool for me. It follows kind of a color line throughout the year.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up. I've noticed that. And I wonder, does that have to do with the soil or is that the plants that do well at that time of year?
Well, I think it's a little bit of the plants. And I also think that we've been choosing plants as human beings for a long time.
Oh.
Yes. Oh. So a lot of the things we get to choose from, it takes, what did Kathy tell me once? About 7 years for a plant to hit the market. Right, it's somebody figures it out or hybridizes it, and then they grow it, and then they have bench trials where they put it in pots and they see how does it survive in a bench, how does it survive in the rain, in the sun, and they kind of, it takes about 7 years. It's like kind of like starting an ocean liner and getting it to stop again, right? So if there are certain plants that have fallen out of favor. And then they become popular again or people want them. It takes a couple years for the growers to catch back up with that.
Oh, that's interesting. So when you say getting it to market, that means responding to its popularity or not.
So, you know, there are trends, there are fashion trends in garden design, just like there are fashion trends in clothes and furnishings. And, you know, there are things that were very, very popular. And one of the things that's really great, I love going into an old garden and finding some of the, now they're called Grammy plants, kind of. Paris. I love Paris. It's an evergreen plant. It was also called Andromeda. Sometime in the 80s, the popular name changed. That's another thing.
Yeah, what did the
popular name? Yeah, let's talk about that.
Because what's Andromeda?
That is going to be the name of the plant.
Yeah, but
okay.
Does it have a popular name?
It did at one point, but the thing that gets really confusing about that, okay? Do you have bluebells in your yard, Susan?
Weeds.
Do you have bluebells? Do you have something you call bluebells in your yard?
Yes, I do.
Those actually around here, if you and I are talking about the same thing, are called wood hyacinths.
Oh, really?
Yes. They're tall. They have the blue flowers. They naturalize. That's actually called a wood hyacinth.
Oh.
But if you look at what a bluebell is somewhere else, it's a completely different plant in a different region. So if I go asking for bluebells.
What are you going to get?
What you going to get? Yep. Black-eyed Susan is another one. That can be a vine. It can be a rutabecchia, which is a composite shaped, meaning that it's got lots of petals that are arrayed in array and a big center to it. We call those black-eyed Susans. That is not what they call black-eyed Susans down in Texas.
What do they call them?
Well, they had a different plant that they called black-eyed Susans.
Oh, okay.
So people used to be so surprised. Oh, it seems so crazy. You've learned all the names of the plants. One of the things is it takes the confusion away.
What? Learning the scientific name?
The official scientific name of the plant. There is no ambiguity. The other thing that's very cool is that those names often tell you something about the plant.
Oh.
Whether it has long leaves or short leaves or, I mean, there are just different components to the name that will tell you something about it. Oides. Oides is Latin for like. It's something like. So if it's bamboides, it's like a bamboo. And so now in my head, I already know kind of what I'm looking at because of the parts of the name of the plant. Seems like a lot to learn, but if you just buy one thing, and we're going to talk about buying only one thing, learn it. You will learn about it. Find it. Fall in love with these things. You've fallen in love with your dog. You know everything about your dog.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to just kind of grab plants and bring them in because they look kind of cool today. And now you've got a relationship with a living thing and you don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. How do I take care of it? What's it going to turn into later? That's always my question. Yes.
So one of my warnings to folks all the time when I worked at the nursery industry and growers spend millions of dollars developing those nifty little pain in the butt plastic tags that come in your plant.
Yes.
Read it. It says something. It will tell you how big the plant will be. It should tell you how to take care of it. There's an awful lot of information in there. And I can promise you that if a shrub says that it will be 7 feet wide, it will be. I know that thing that's only the size of a water bottle right now is really cute. I said water bottle because that's what's sitting next to me. But just, you know, something that's only 12 inches tall, 6 inches wide. How darling is that? I need 5.
Ooh.
No, you better read the tag, Mayor. And you read the tag and you suddenly realize this thing, it wants to be, most trees around here, a lot of the deciduous trees want to be 30 and 40 feet wide. But we put them in borders because we haven't really thought that out. And in my landscape business, I can tell you, I spent an enormous amount of time over the years taking plants out. One of the things that I tell people about planting is there's one of those little mnemonics is the first year they sleep, the second year they creep, and the third year they leap. The first year that plant is adjusting to the soil, the wind, the everything that's new to its place, kind of like you would be in a new place, making friends, right? Figuring it out. Year two, they're growing roots. A plant has almost as much terrestrial material as it has aerial material.
Really?
Yes. So it's busy growing stuff you can't see. And then year three, it goes, okay, got my shoes on. I'm ready to run. So a lot of times I just try to get people to think in patience. Think in terms of patience. Don't think impatience.
Impatience, right.
Impatience or another thing you can use in the shade.
Yes, I just bought some. Well, and I was thinking about the sleep creep leap thing because I love euphorbia.
Yes.
And I bought a euphorbia plant in the hopes that it would fill out this area. And I thought it was dead the first 2 years I had it. I thought, oh my God, this thing is just not going to survive. I kept just feeding it fish poop and watering it. And all of a sudden this year, it's gorgeous. It's big. It's filling that space I wanted it to fill.
You might be taking too nice a care to it.
Oh.
You can do that to plants.
You can overlove them?
You can overlove them.
Smother
yes.
love.
Yes. Yes. You can overwater. You can overfeed. There are some plants that thrive in crappy soil. So if you take that plant home and put it in really nice soil, it will struggle. And that won't make any sense to you at all.
Oh.
So we it's so crazy because of the way we can move plants around the world right now, right? Even around our country. We have plants that grow here, but only by a hair, right? That thing when you read about our zones,
yes,
right? It makes it kind of sound like everything just kind of plops in a box and it's like, oh, everything here goes in zone 8. And it'll take the heat and the cold and everything else of that zone. No, everything in that zone 8 box is everything. It isn't everything that will thrive here. It's everything that will survive here.
Oh. So how do we know when we're going to get something that will thrive? How do we pick the thriving plants?
You will learn them as you start to garden. And you should talk to the people, you know, this is one of the reasons about going to a nursery. The people at the nursery mostly know what they're talking about. Even if you go to a big box store, those folks that work at the big orange box store, mm-hmm. they know the plants. That's a really tough question.
That will thrive.
How to pick the ones. And the other thing, too, is that thrive is controlled by things you and I can't control. Okay, we're going to tip into climate change. Sorry, we were going to keep this
light. Oh, I wanted
to
ask you about that.
There are a lot of plants that don't die back anymore. And when I was a little girl, they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up here in the Puget Sound. I was North Tacoma, actually Old Town Rat, born and raised.
Mm-hmm.
But we had several weeks of snow. I mean, it was just a slightly different climate than we have now. I've had a couple of summers now where things that should have died back didn't. And as long as I kept them watered, now they're exhausted. I finally cut some of it back because I thought I wanted to see how long I could keep it going. And it never got to rest.
Huh. They need to rest.
They need to rest. So some of the things that have been doing very well here because, okay, gosh, I always wish I had a really simple answer for you. And this kind of relates to some of the things we were talking about
before
the show. Is like I sucked a whole bunch of stuff up like a sponge I'm trying to squeeze it back out.
Well, what about, let's go to water.
So plants, first of all, they're all different. They're all different. They're like animals. Just because it's the plant kingdom. You know, a tree, even two kinds of flowers don't have anything to do with each other. And so, you know, there are certain kinds of fruit that are hard to grow west of the mountains. Not because it doesn't get warm enough here. It doesn't get cold enough here.
Oh.
Certain plants need X number of hours below 32 degrees to go dormant so that they can store enough energy to grow fruit.
Okay, so.
But you could still buy that tree here and plant it.
And will it thrive or not?
No.
So when we talk about climate change, what I'm noticing is that we have more frequent low water years.
Mm-hmm.
I've also noticed that mourning doves started showing up about 3 years ago, and those are a desert bird.
Yes. I have a nest of them near my garden right now.
So what that's telling me is that we are losing that northern jungle climate, mm-hmm. What is that going to do to the big trees that need lots and lots of water? Are they starting to struggle?
A lot of them are starting to struggle. The thing that's always hard for me with trees, and I, I'll claim right now, I'm not an arborist, but I've worked with a lot of trees. And when you notice, trees are scary for me because when you notice that they're starting to die, they're kind of already dead. We always called them the not dead.
Zombie trees.
Kind of a zombie tree. And it's always so difficult because it usually happens once a tree is something you have a relationship with, mm-hmm. something that is already part of your visual garden and landscape. One of the things that's hard, sometimes people plant Christmas trees. There's a lot of those alpine and subalpine trees that will kind of like limp along down here for a long time, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And then you get really used to it. It's in your, you know, it's in the circle in the driveway or something else. And they just eventually are just worn out from trying.
Huh.
Or they get bugs because they're not at their peak.
So they don't have the stuff to
fight
them off.
They don't have the stuff to fight it off. Same thing happens to little tiny people and old people in our, you know, with germs.
The immune system starts to go.
The immune system of the trees starts to go because it's just been so compromised for so long.
So with that idea in mind, are there plants to put in our gardens that, should we be changing what we're looking at and looking at plants that need perhaps less water? Or
yeah, okay, couple things. One, if you're going to plant plants that need water, and this is really a good idea all the way around, co-locate. See, designs, I wish I could have done this in half an hour. Design's a little more complicated than what should I plant here. You need to figure out what plants need so that you co-locate them not only for the way they look, but what they need. So that if you've got plants that need water, put those all together. So that you're not running around the garden trying to get water on the watery plants. And a lot of the things that make flowers and look real pretty and the things we want to have, they take a lot of energy. Flowers take an inordinate amount of energy to produce.
And that includes water.
Water's part of their energy, yeah, their food and energy system. So if you want to have those colorful pots, you want to have something welcoming, you want something to rest your eyes on visually, make sure that you put the things that need that water together and that then you're putting, and then we talked a little bit about some of the design principles.
Yes.
Massing things. It is so easy to get caught up and fall in love with something that fits in your hands.
Okay.
Right? You go to the nursery, you pick up a plant, you go, oh my God, I love this. You set it in your basket. And I love this. And I love this green one. And I love the orange one. And I'll take three yellow. And pretty soon you've got, I don't know, a bowl of cereal. I mean, it's just kind of all chaos and crazy.
And you try to put them all in one pot.
Or you're trying to figure out where they fit in and they don't look weird. And pretty soon they just look like weird knickknacks. And, you know, the thing to do is look and see what's doing well. None of this happens fast, Susan. Look and see what is doing well in your garden.
Is an art that requires great patience.
Patience.
Well,
if
and
something does well, plant a lot of it.
Yeah, I've done that. This worked last year. I'm going to try it again this year.
And what you'll find is that it starts to have a lot more visual impact. That if you've got a big, ceanothus is one of my favorite plants. Love this plant. Takes drought. Takes crappy soil and the deer leave it alone and it gets blue flowers on it.
Wow.
Yeah, but it doesn't like nice soil and it's a great plant to use.
We're talking on Real Talk with Mary McGinnis, who is a landscape and interior designer, about design patterns in your garden. Mary, you're going to have to come back.
I know. I'm sorry.
We
I feel like we just
so
ran through a table
about.
Of contents. But
all right. Well, we'll pick those
fearless,
apart.
Be patient, and be loving, and you'll do a good job in your garden.
And forgive yourself when it screws up.
Oh, yeah. I get a lot of forgiveness.
You've been listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon. We are KVSHLP. Vashon, Washington, your island connection. Thank you for listening. Real Talk is here Tuesdays at noon, Fridays at 6. For now.